Hey, do you remember Ghostbusters 2? Hello, and welcome to Hey Do You Remember, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Ghostbusters 2. It's been 5 years since the Ghostbusters saved New York from utter annihilation, and somehow most of the city seems to have forgotten all about that pesky apocalypse. As a result, Ray, Egon, Peter, and Winston are now regarded as con men, and the lawsuits that stemmed from the destruction they caused have all but buried their business. But a strange river of ooze is flowing beneath the city, ooze that seems to feed off of the negative energy produced by the notoriously angry citizens. Where did it come from, and how is it connected to the strange and haunting portrait of Vigo the Carpathian now hanging in the Manhattan Museum of Art? As it becomes undeniable that there is no rational explanation for the escalating series of unusual events plaguing the city, the mayor is left with one important question. Who you gonna call? Despite the success of the original film, a sequel was not all but guaranteed. The cast and director Ivan Reitman had no intentions of returning for a follow-up, but the first Ghostbusters and the subsequent Real Ghostbusters cartoon series were so unbelievably successful that there was no way the studio wasn't going to force that golden goose to lay another egg. It took half a decade, but the powers that be finally convinced everyone to seriously consider strapping on their proton packs for another installment. Unfortunately, it wasn't a dynamite idea for a story they just had to tell that got everyone back on board. It was the fact that most of them had failed to score a major hit since the first film, and this highly anticipated sequel would provide their careers with a much-needed shot in the arm. For many, the lack of inspiration and passion was too evident in the final product. Reviews were mixed at best, and many of the complaints centered around the lack of innovation and recycling of elements from the first film. And unfortunately, audiences didn't respond any better. The film's domestic gross was less than half of its predecessors. However, Ghostbusters 2 has its defenders. All of these years later, the debate rages on. Is the movie really that bad, or is its reputation unfair? What caused the initial backlash, and what merits are we maybe callously glossing over? We'll dig into all of that and more, but first, Donna, why don't you tell our listeners why we're taking a look at the sequel, despite the fact that we haven't covered the original yet?
Because Ghostbusters 2, ladies and gentlemen, I feel like the reasonable ones of you will all agree that Ghostbusters 2 is by far the best Ghostbusters, and I have a whole movie full of evidence.
Is it Ghostbusters 1?
You might think that, but no. You'd be wrong.
Ghostbusters 2 thinks it's Ghostbusters 1.
This was, I think, probably one of the first, you know, probably three or four PG-13 movies. Is this even PG-13?
It's PG, I believe.
I don't know. But my parents were not going to probably just, like, let me watch it. But my aunt and uncle had it on a video cassette tape along with Crocodile Dundee 2 and the original Batman. and so those were the movies that I would like that, you know, maybe like you did enough adult time, you can go.
Do you think Crocodile Dundee 2 is the better movie?
I don't know. Maybe.
We're going to have to investigate this one at some point as well.
How about Teen Wolf 2?
Oh, the rare T-O-O. I love that
Teen
in movies.
Wolf as well.
No, but Ghostbusters 2 is the best Ghostbusters, and that is why we are watching it.
It was Donna's very controversial stance that made us go like, whoa, okay, we better dig into this.
Hashtag hot takes.
And I want to say that when I found out you guys didn't think that this was the best Ghostbusters, I started sort of polling rooms full of people I was in where I was sort of uncomfortable.
I just pictured, like, you beating people with a pole. I was polling rooms full of people.
Are these the same people you're making toasts to in your apartment?
No, these are real, actual people who I've interacted with socially. And I'm sort of asking, you know, what's your favorite Ghostbusters? What do you remember? And it was really split. I got like two people for sure who like Ghostbusters 2 better. Two people for sure who like Ghostbusters 1, I guess, if you call it that.
Can't even say it.
And then about 10 people who couldn't remember the difference between the two of them.
Wow. Oh, I get that a lot. If you haven't watched them in a while, like kind of...
There are reasons.
Which one is the one with the painting? And
they
have
interchangeable plot points.
Yeah, really. They do. They really do. Yeah.
Carlos, what about you?
Okay, so I've seen this one more than Ghostbusters 1. That's true. And this is one of my first movie-going experiences that I can remember in a theater. And I remember the theater. It's very strange. There used to be an old movie palace on Milwaukee and Pulaski for you Chicagoans out there. It is now a CVS, but there was a time when it was just an empty lot, and I was driving by with my dad, and this would have been about maybe like 8 to 10 years ago, and I was like, Dad, did there used to be a movie theater here? And I hadn't been in this part of town for in a while. And he's like, I don't remember. And I was like, I feel like we saw Ghostbusters 2 here. And then it was like that sparked. He goes, oh my God, yeah, there totally used to be a movie theater on this corner. And we definitely saw Ghostbusters 2 here. It's really strange that it stuck out in both of our minds. And it's really strange because I remember going with my mom and dad, which I don't have many memories of the two of them together. Especially in movie theaters.
Was it Ghostbusters 2 that did it?
I think it brought everyone together. I've always remembered it being totally watchable, totally enjoyable, had no ill will against it. I even put it up, once on a Facebook debate as one of the few sequels that's very good. And especially a sequel to a comedy, because comedy sequels don't do very well.
Right.
I give you Caddyshack 2. Which...
Just pick one. I mean, you can't...
Which I think is the better Caddyshack, but we'll get to that.
Are you fucking serious?
I hate Caddyshack. I like Caddyshack, too.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's everyone turning off.
Yep, I was like, well, this is all just for us now. Okay? Can't believe what I'm hearing.
Anywho. I liked the Rick Moranis of the second one. I love him.
We're going to talk about that.
The dude, what is his actual name?
Peter McNichol?
Yes. I looked it up Janosch. Before because I hate being like,
we're
going to
get into that too.
I didn't know he didn't speak with an accent for years.
I think until I saw him on Ally McBeal. And it wasn't until
maybe the Mr. Bean movie where I was like, oh my God, he doesn't speak like that. And I was watching the movie yesterday and today, and I mentioned to my wife, I was like, I didn't know for years that he didn't speak that way. And she just kind of gave me like a look, and she's like, I didn't know that he didn't speak that way. She never watched Adam McBeal. Yeah. She never saw Numbers. You know, I loved Numbers. I think that this is definitely the second best Ghostbusters movie. I do think that it is a much higher quality than history has remembered it.
That's sort of how I want to frame this discussion, because my opinion of this movie I've had quite a ride with this movie over the years. I've alluded to the fact before that sometimes we watch movies a little differently, or I do at least, when we know we're doing it for the show, just thinking about it more critically. So my reaction to it this time was like, because I thought I was pretty much where you were at, which was like, it's not as good as the first one, but it's totally watchable, entertaining, good movie. Let me get into this, because I actually took a bunch of notes on this. So for as far as like all my memories and stuff go, so since this is the first time we've talked about anything Ghostbusters related, I think you were probably the same way. We had you had a lot of the toys growing up.
I had the, not only did I have the toys, I had the firehouse. I brought it up in a previous episode. Right. I used that as the, I would turn the firehouse on its side and use that as my Ninja Turtle sewer.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had all the action figures. I had the firehouse, the Ecto-1, and then I remember the Christmas where I finally got my proton pack and the ghost trap. And like my dad had sent it from out of state and I like just tore it open immediately. put it on, and my mom was like, okay, so that's Christmas morning, time to go to church. And I refused to go to church unless I could wear my proton pack.
Yes.
Good call.
And my mom, like, it was like fighting, and but I wouldn't budge. So I did. I wore my proton pack over my little suit. Just strolled into that church like, I'm here for the Holy Spirit.
Because I'm going to trap it.
Oh, no.
And then I was thinking how it's weird that I was never bothered by the fact that the toys or the cartoon which the toys came from, that they didn't look like the actors in the movie.
Oh, that always bugged me.
Did it really?
Especially Egon.
Egon's the one that looks... Him and Ray are the only ones that kind of sort of look like...
Egon is blonde in the cartoon.
But if yeah. you... But that's the only thing that's off. Even his voice...
His hair swirls.
But it's still big hair. And it, like, he looks... He's identifiable as... See? Mm. Didn't you have a crush on animated Egon?
I was deeply in love with the animated and he's, Egon.
And he sounds yeah. a lot like Harold Ramis. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I thought that's the one that's most jarring to me.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah. I think Venkman's the one that's most... He looks... He sounds like... Well, it's the voice of Garfield. It's Maurice LaMarche doing the voice. And I mean, he doesn't look anything like Bill Murray.
Well, didn't Bill Murray voice Garfield
in the movies later? Damn, yeah, I mean, weird. Did you know Uncle Joey from Full House took over as the voice of Peter in season 3 and started doing like kind of a shitty Bill Murray impression?
I could see that.
Wow.
But yeah, so, well, the reason it turns out that the cartoon, even though it was made after the success of the movie, was meant to capitalize on all that. The firehouse is the same. The car is the same. The reason they don't look like the actors is they didn't want to pay the licensing likeness fees. Like, the actors would have to approve. They'd have to get a chunk of change for that. So they said, we'll change it just enough. And then there was... Do you guys know why the cartoon was called The Real Ghostbusters?
Because there was another Ghostbusters.
Filmation had a cartoon called Ghostbusters, and it had nothing to do with these movies. But and then when Ghostbusters 2 came out, they didn't want to pay the licensing fees on the merchandise for the movie to the actors or the cartoon. So then there was a third variation of like cartoony Ghostbusters that showed up on all the Ghostbusters 2 t-shirts and tie-in coloring books and all
but
that
like for
stuff.
That, just get four other actors to make the sequel. It doesn't even make any sense.
What?
I'd rather just have shitty looking merchandise, yeah. I think.
It's like, we don't want to pay. We're going to make this movie. And we're going to get all the people from the original movie because that was really successful. But the merchandise isn't going to look anything like them. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Actually, you know what's cool? If you go on... So, first of all of the Real Ghostbusters episodes are on YouTube. I was watching some before we were recording. And there's also... You can find like a pilot or pitch video for the Real Ghostbusters where Peter does look more like Bill Murray and they're all in the beige jumpsuits instead of the color-coded ones they wear in the show. And I think it's like 10 minutes long or something. That's also on YouTube. And that was also kind of cool to look at.
That's interesting.
But so... What I really loved about the first Ghostbusters movie when I was a kid was, like, it was really funny, but it was also legitimately scary. Like, that first scene in the library terrified me. And I think it was probably my first interaction with something that, like, mixed genres. I just don't think I was used to that as a little kid. So that movie was really, just really special. And I think the fact that it did scare me so much is a big part of why I loved it so much. And like the edge that first one had is something that even as a kid kind of disappointed me about the sequel when they like it was too cartoonish. It was too soft. It just wasn't like it didn't have the balls that the first movie did.
No ghost blowjob dreams.
Certainly none of that going on.
See, I feel the absolute opposite. The first one does not scare me at all. Never has.
Oh, I think the imagery in the first one is so much scarier. Like, because like in this one, you've got the dude in the painting. Who,
he's terrifying.
He's Viggo.
He's okay. I don't think he's
scary.
I don't think he's. I think the dogs in the first movie, the library ghost,
the
creepy
so
cab driver.
I think
you're dumb. You're crazy. This is the thing I hate most about the second one is that the ghosts are lame.
I think that
except for the Scolari brothers in the courtroom, they're
great.
All awesome. Super lame.
Which is great. I think. The the whole idea of this dude is now kind of like a vessel for Viggo. He's doing his dirty work, and like the flashlight eyes.
The flashlight eyes are creepy.
I think that's great, and yeah.
Yeah, except that it's just the same fucking thing. He's just serving the Rick Moranis role from the first movie.
That's correct.
And I think that was a cooler villain with a cooler backstory and like way more sinister than... Plus, Viggo goes out like a bitch. He's not even that threatening.
Well, but the scary thing about the second movie is that ooze is affecting all of the people.
So we're going to get into that because the movie is not interested in that idea. That's a great idea that this movie does not waste. There's no screen time devoted to it.
I also do think that the moment with the baby on the ledge.
Yeah, that's really
that,
scary.
That actually did have an imprint on me.
Well, especially now.
Dude coming through. Yeah, well, true. With two children now. Uh-huh. But dude coming in with like a baby buggy and like just stretching out.
That scene makes no goddamn sense. I don't want to get into it yet because we're not even there. I disagree.
Wrong. It's the best Ghostbusters. I'm a dinosaur.
Boom!
No, I'm
shutting it down. And then, like, the other thing I want to say about the first movie is that as you grow up, like, as an adult, it works on whole other levels. Like, it's not just the nostalgia of that movie. Like, that is just, it's just a really, really good movie. And the script is better than I think it even gets credit for. Like, it's just a solid film.
It's really great. There's some really good things about the second one that I didn't remember, though. Like, the idea that just the way they made like the Ghostbusters song is like exists in this universe and that they use it to dance at birthday parties. Like,
I thought that
was great.
I thought that was really funny. I love their reaction to their post fame. And like,
we have to get into all that because there is great stuff there, but then there's also one big, huge, glaring problem with the way this movie.
He-Man?
No, there's that. Especially in 1989 when this movie came out and He-Man had been gone for 2 years. But, okay, so obviously I was excited for Ghostbusters 2 as a kid. I also saw this in the theater. I remember vividly, like with my dad. It was the weekend before Batman came out. Everything in my life falls into two categories. BBAB.
The year of our bat.
Here's the thing, though. Like when you're 7 or 8 years old, it's just the new Ghostbusters movie. Like, that's it. Like, you don't start having the conversations about which one's better or which one's this. Like, it's just more of something you love. And so I wasn't totally engaged with it. And my dad remembered this too, actually, that like that was like one of the first movies he remembers walking out of with me sort of feeling like, oh, you didn't seem really into that movie. Obviously, that has a lot to do with what was going on because of Short Circuit 2, which we touched on in that episode.
Yeah.
That was certainly a very huge factor.
That's also a great comedy sequel.
It really is.
It really is.
Arguably because the first one's not a comedy.
My point was as a kid, I didn't regard this as a bad movie. Neither did my friends. We just never had those conversations. It was just like... And also, I think as a kid, the cartoon at some point started dominating, like, all of the Ghostbusters. I mean, that sort of became... There was so much more of that than...
I remember the big difference between the cartoon and the movies was Slimer's role.
Yeah.
And I remember being jarred by that. And like, wait, why isn't he their pet?
Well, and if
like,
you
why
don't
they love him?
Yeah.
But I saw the movie first, so I think in the cartoon it was suddenly like, oh, now he's their sidekick. And if you didn't watch the cartoon and you just watched the movies... In Ghostbusters 2, when Slimer's just hanging out, it's kind of like, what the fuck is going on?
So I saw the second movie first. That makes it, the order in which I saw things.
Oh, that it makes a huge difference on your point of view, especially, Don.
Ghostbusters 2, I saw first. Ghostbusters 1 probably came after watching the cartoon.
Okay.
So Slimer, in the second film, Slimer is kind of hanging around. He's very, you know, he's not that he's threatening at all in the first one. He's just kind of got a funny moment in the first one. But in the second one, he's kind of like almost an Easter egg. Like, oh yeah, hey, remember Slimer? He's also still hanging around. And then in the cartoon, he's basically their pet. And he helps them. And
they renamed the show Slimer and the Ghostbusters. Uh-huh. Yeah. That, he had his own high C flavor.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember that.
Yeah, Ecto Cooler was amazing. And then, so then you watch the first one and you're like, wait, why don't they love him? He only wants to be loved. But I don't know that the film version of Slimer only wants to be loved. I think
he not in the first one, no, for sure. It's so funny. It's like a, like it's like just a scene of that establishes them like on one of their first jobs. Mm-hmm. And then there was just something so memorable about the design of that, that I guess
yeah. Yeah. I go Slimer.
So charismatic, that Slimer.
What a performance.
He's really powerful. Slimer.
Well, yeah. So
I thought Daniel Day-Lewis is great as Slimer.
The fact that he roles. Lived as a ghost for 6 months.
I mean, truly, just, yeah. This guy's crazy.
So it wasn't until like many, many years later, because this was not one I revisited a lot as a kid, actually, which is strange, because the other thing that occurred to me was, as a kid, I was most obsessed with whatever the latest installment of a series was, regardless of the quality. Like, even though as a kid, Superman 2 was probably my favorite Superman movie, I think I probably watched Superman 4 more, even though I liked it the least amount, just because it was the newest one. And that's sort of how I was with a lot of movies. Like, Return of the Jedi got a lot of play when I was a kid. Ghostbusters 2, not one of those movies. I don't think I even owned this on VHS.
Ninja Turtles 3.
Not Ninja Turtles. Well, but see, Ninja Turtles 3, I was probably already, like, too old to see that movie in the theater when it came out. Like, I did, but I was probably too old. Like, that summer between,
Ninja Turtles 3 was like,
fifth
oh.
grade, junior high, my mom was kind of like, you're really going to see that?
it's when you walked out of that theater going, like, we're going to all agree that didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
That was garbage. Hmm.
But so, yeah, so I saw it again, Ghostbusters 2, I saw it again as a teenager, and that was probably the first time I, like, felt like, this is fucking horrible. Like, this is a bad movie. And I avoided it for a long time after that because of, I just had that, like, oh, that's not something I need to revisit. And that was also, that was also when I started to become aware that I wasn't the only person that felt this way, that the movie had a reputation.
And, I didn't know that.
Because we grew up pre-internet.
That's
there was no
and
so, and I'd see bits and pieces of it on cable and stuff over the years, and not really paying much attention to it. It wasn't until I started dating Kristen, actually, where we were on set together one night and like shooting something, and she quoted something from Ghostbusters 2, and one of the actors and I were both like, oh, Ghostbusters 2, blah.
What was the quote?
I can't remember. I wish I could remember.
Go, Kristen.
And Kristen was the one that said, like, no, you know what? It's not as good as the first one, but it's like, it's not a bad movie. It's entertaining. It's got some really good moments. And quite frankly, it's still better than most of the bullshit we've been sitting through at theaters lately. And so she was the one that, like, really urged me to, like, give it another shot. And so the next time, it was on, we watched it, and that was when I started to have sort of a turnaround with it, with like, yeah, you know what? There are some really good lines in this movie. There's some really cool ideas in this movie. And it's like, it's a good movie to like throw on and just have going in the background. Like it's perfect for that sort of a thing. I still have a ton of problems with it. But my attitude has shifted pretty dramatically over time. Like whenever I see it pop up on, like, whenever some website does some snarky worst sequels of all time list, and I see it on there, it's like, come on. Like, that's unfair. So my current stance is that it's not a bad movie. It's just a disappointing one. And I know that sounds like faint praise, but that is a huge distinction. But so, yeah, let's get into it. Let's unpack this thing. We just looked at it with fresh eyes. So let's see how Ghostbusters 2 holds up. So I like that it starts super abruptly, just the black screen, boom, 5 years later. I remember being in the theater and my dad, like, he had to lean over and be like, this is it, it's starting, because apparently I was an idiot.
Hey, the movie's actually on now.
This is what we're doing now. But so yeah, and there's like the shot of the ooze bubbling up from under the sidewalk. The Dana's baby carriage rolls through it. And this is like the only real scene in the movie where, as she's walking down the street, you see all the other citizens of New York being shitty to one another. Like, as she's, it's the tracking shot on Dana, and everybody that she's sort of passing is just being awful with one another. And then, of course, the carriage goes rolling away on its own. My favorite part of this sequence was, so you got this runaway carriage, baby carriage, and it's going down the street, clearly moving like on its own, with its own agency here. Like, it's not just going down a hill. There's a part where it's like speeding at another car, And the guy driving the car goes, brr, just lays on the horn all like, come on. What do you think's happening here?
It's one of them babies in them newfangled drivable carriages.
And then
that's scary. That is a scary scene.
I think it's scary.
Where is that baby?
Every time I see this, I'm always a little shocked that like that's the cold open that like it ends like, and then Dana picks up the baby, and then it gets to the swirling Ghostbusters logo. I'm like, that's the tease. Like I don't know. It's not a. It is what it is.
This is going to be a theme, I think, for the night.
There is still a lot I like in the movie. In fact, this very next scene, I do like you guys. I like the premise of Ghostbusters being washed up has-beens. The birthday party scene's great because it starts out, it's just the Ecto-1, like, speeding down the street. It looks like they're getting ready for a job. And then even as they walk in the house and the woman, you know, like, how many are there? Oh, blah, blah, blah. How big? And you think it's for
a weird reaction to that
haunting.
Question.
How many are there?
That was creepy.
That was creepy.
And then the reveal that it's the little kid's birthday party is great. It's so great. And that the kids aren't interested. And actually, the one that tells them, my dad says you're full of crap.
Yeah.
Jason Reitman, the director.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
He turns up in a lot of Ivan Reitman's movies. I know he's in Kindergarten Cop also. I can picture him in that movie. But yeah, so
he would go on to direct Juno.
But yeah, this is my big problem with this is that what the fuck, New York? First of all, I love the idea that there are so many lawsuits against the Ghostbusters that it kind of like cripples them. That's enough. Like, rather than pretend all of New York just forgot about this giant thing, like, I mean, there were ghosts all over the goddamn city. Yeah. They were everywhere.
Yeah.
The containment unit exploded. Well, they were everywhere.
There was like a 4,000-ton marshmallow that exploded.
Very hard to miss. Yeah. The mayor was involved.
It's a civic nightmare. Sure. I'll give you that. But I just don't think it's that threatening for the people. Like, stay away from this area.
That would have been, like, headline news, though, all over the world.
There was a huge montage showing ghosts terrorizing the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might have been, like, the worst thing that had ever happened.
I mean, but it didn't seem that bad, really.
But by that point in the movie, the Ghostbusters were on fire. Ghosts are a thing. Who are you going to call? Like, that. Yeah. You can't dismiss all of that because it discredits everything that happens in the first movie.
People do all the time.
No, not at this level. Not at this level.
It is hard to take that.
This would be like saying 9/11 didn't happen.
Not quite.
Well, yes, it is. Yes. In terms of a huge, giant destruction. And look, I'm not saying
that. That was a marshmallow. I mean,
we're talking in.
It was a supernatural force. Not
this would be like 2 years later, people forgetting that like the
Godzilla.
World Trade Center.
It'd be like forgetting
there.
Godzilla happened. Like you can't ever
you
forget.
You can't
that.
Undo this, and you can't have the mayor and everyone around him pretending that they don't.
The only way for that to have worked would be to establish that like the ooze is making everyone forget. Or, in the first movie, no one saw it somehow. It's the same problem I have with Transformers, actually. It's like, no one in L.A. saw the giant robot people. You're just going to imagine that it was a training exercise gone horribly wrong. Like, it's really hard to believe. But it's the only reconciliation I have to make. It's the only thing where I'm like, okay, I just have to go along
one.
With. Yes. But in the first movie, you also have to make that leap that even though ghosts are established, people are still, like, against the Ghostbusters, even though everyone has seen a ghost at some point. Like, you still
have
to make some.
But does the first movie establish that everyone has seen a ghost at some point?
I thought we just said there was a giant montage.
No, I'm talking about the very end, like, in terms of leading into this movie. But in terms of, like, the Ghostbusters, like, people being skeptical of the Ghostbusters at first in that movie. That was before the huge, giant explosion that sent ghosts swirling all over the place.
At the beginning of the movie, the beginning of the first movie, ghosts are not widely accepted. But by the middle of, or at least the climax of the second movie, everyone is being attacked by ghosts all the time.
Right.
And yet, the Ghostbusters are still seeing bureaucratic resistance when there shouldn't be. It should be like this. We're going to send in the military to you know, carpet bomb New York.
I still think them having an inappropriate response is that's easier to swallow than cut to 2 years later. And you guys are 5 years later. Sorry. And you guys are frauds. Not a big enough difference.
None of those. Well, it's a big difference in that those kids wouldn't have remembered any of it.
The kids, but, sure.
Yeah, that's, yeah, but the parents.
So here's the easier fix. Because, like, if the whole, because let's try and figure out why the movie needs to start this way. Like, because I do like the idea of them being washed up. I like the idea of them having separated and kids sort of treating them like a joke. I like them having to appear in court to defend themselves. And I love that scene. It just doesn't make sense that if the whole city's pretending we don't remember this, why does it not work? Which I think is what I was about to say before we got into all this was, I like the element of like all these lawsuits against the Ghostbusters for the property damage.
And I thought it was really,
that seems
really,
like a very like realistic response.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would have been enough to bury their business. And if there was like, if they were prohibited from touching that equipment again, but there are still ghosts all over the city and people ask, you know, like begging for their help and sort of resenting them because they're not lifting a finger and not understanding how the red tape works. And like, we had to split up and like, we're taking on these other jobs now because we can't do that, but there's still a problem. And it's like, and so nobody has to go like, ghosts, it's just sort of
no one
like
will ever know
the motion listen, I just listen. Made. But like,
what motion accompanied?
Me. They can guess. Oh. But like, but the attitude being like, okay, but you know, all the mayor and all these other people, they're still saying you need to answer for all the destruction here. Like that alone, I thought would have been enough. If, and it's because really after the courtroom scene, this has no bearing on the story at all anyways. Like there's no.
And I think that's the bigger issue is that it doesn't really add a ton to the story after what, 15 minutes in, 20 minutes,
20 in? Minutes in, yeah. I would say. And that,
after that, it's just,
and
it's almost like they just wanted to replicate the beats of the first movie, which
is a huge problem for me. That's probably, like, as an adult, that's probably one of my biggest overall criticisms with the film is that beat for beat, it's the first movie. And so if you want to start your first movie with the citizens not totally being on board with these guys and looking at them as frauds, that's great. The problem here is twofold. One, we've already seen that story. We've already, and a more satisfying version of it, quite frankly. And two, it's a giant plot hole. It just doesn't make sense. You can't just sweep it. The climax of that movie was too big. I don't know if you guys read the Jurassic Park books. In The Lost World, the way that novel starts, well, the way the movie starts too, is that InGen has sort of paid off everybody that was there and they've come up with an official explanation for what was actually going on that island. Da, 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 da. That's fine if you want to go that route. But something like, it would be like if in the next Avengers movie, everybody forgot about the aliens. Like you just, you can't, they're not going to do that because it doesn't make sense. It's just, I'm trying to figure out why they, it's just such a strange way to start the movie, but
I mean, I guess I'm just really happy with it because I just ignore the parts that don't make sense.
That's
well, I mean, see, to me,
if you separate it totally from the first movie,
which Donna had, which I had, you saw it first, so I can understand how it works perfectly.
Yeah,
if this is the first Ghostbusters movie you see,
but Ghostbusters 1 basically ends with a Godzilla fight. I mean, Marshmallow Man is huge, and everyone would have seen him, and there, I mean, it would have been hard to deny what happened.
Right.
But you just kind of have to forgive that to watch the rest of this movie, because it's only going to affect 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah,
and then you
forget
go,
about
and
it
then,
real quick.
And then you go, like, there's what, 70 minutes left? 80 minutes left?
Do you guys understand why this is such a huge problem? No, not even just that it's a plot point. The fact that you are both sitting here admitting, like, it's fine because in 20 minutes it won't even matter.
It won't even matter in 20
minutes. Fuck this. This is so stupid. But okay, here we go. So
I would say, a lot of movies, you have to make that same leap for a lot of movies. For instance, Home Alone 2. You mean to tell me that mom isn't keeping Kevin directly like attached to her teat?
The tone of these movies is very different. And there's like, and yes, okay. I see what you're saying, that you do have to.
For it to happen again,
but this
those
is,
parents
but this
are the
is,
worst parents
yeah,
ever.
Oh, absolutely. They should but be this is the difference between away. This is the difference between Home Alone 2 being like, oh my god, they did it again and making that leap, and Home Alone 2 starting and then pretending that Home Alone 1 didn't happen. That's everyone around Kevin sort of acting like that last Christmas was fine. Like that, it's just a, it's kind of a different thing.
It'd be funny if they were also being sued by every state. Was it federal, state, and like city agency that there is.
Okay, so Dana, because of the incident with the baby carriage, she goes to see Egon. Harold Ramis. Oh. This hurts. He's so good.
I love him.
It's funny, like as a kid, it's sort of like Michelangelo, everybody's favorite. It was just Peter as a little kid. I think as an adult, man, it's Egon all the way. I think he's my favorite Ghostbuster.
My favorite has never been Peter. Is that weird? No, my favorite Ghostbuster is Ray.
Ray.
Was Ray when I was a kid.
Huh.
And now it's Egon.
My favorite was always Egon across the board. Well, and my second favorite was Ray because my last
Ray
name
had,
is Ray.
Well, that's true. And Ray had like a childlike
love of
everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, him and Egon together is is usually my favorite stuff in the Ghostbusters movies.
And actually, when you watch the first... Well, when I watch the first Ghostbusters again... I love everything Winston says in the entire movie.
We got to get into that. So poor Winston.
Yeah, what the F, man?
Seriously?
The injustices against that guy. We're going to, once we get to a little further down, we're going to get into all that. But like, my favorite scene in this movie is the one without, it's the Ghostbusters without Peter. So, that's so weird. I thought this was just like, a given that like, yeah. Peter Venkman, that's the Ghostbusters.
Well, yeah, because he's the biggest, star of the bunch. But I just love like
charismatic.
And the first Ghostbusters movie, like Ray loves the fire pole so much.
Oh,
they have a pole and it works, you know.
And isn't he the one that's pushing to like we should sleep here tonight?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a big kid. I love he's charming.
Yeah. Okay. So and then Egon is what is he doing? He's seeing how human emotions actually affect the physical environment. Right. That's the experiment he's running, which is cool because it seems like it's going to tie into. I'm like, oh, great, because that's where this movie's going. No, it's not. But
it kind of is though.
No, kind of is like the absolute
he's
max.
Studying these things.
I think this is an awesome, awesome idea, and I just don't. But the movie ends with the slime being so ambiguous about what it, how it actually works and what it's doing. And I just don't, it's such so much wasted potential with what they set up here.
I just think the slime is, I mean, it's like a, what's the word? It's a symbol for community, I guess is what I'm trying to say is like, if everyone is negative, will be negative.
Well, this is what I wanted. This is what I wanted more of in the movie was, and I'm spoiling all this so early on, but it doesn't matter.
It was released 30 years ago.
The is that I like the idea that it's very vague in the movie how this works. Like I said, because there's a suggestion that not only is the slime affecting people, like once it gets on you, like Ray and Winston start behaving very aggressively with each other. There's also the insinuation that the people are affecting the slime. Like there's sort of a symbiotic thing going on here, but it doesn't push that idea. And frankly, what we're missing is the same thing that's actually missing in Dark Knight Rises. If you're going to have a plot that is all about the people of Gotham, the people of New York, we need to see those people.
Yeah.
This cannot be a story that happens between six characters. And there's just not enough of like, of the ooze sort of like making New York worse and simultaneously New York making it more powerful. Like that just doesn't happen in the movie.
But there are lines that are like, I think Winston even says like, no better place for this place, for this river of ooze to be than New York. Like, you know,
but
you
I want
to,
but New York. But I want to see that, and I want to see how it's getting more powerful, and what, and I want to see the effect it's having on the city. That, to me, is actually more interesting than the fact that everybody has turned on the Ghostbusters because they think they're con men.
Right. That would have been a better opening, probably, is just everyone.
And it's all right there. And like I said at the top, there are things I really like in this movie. There are a lot of great ideas, and it's just... And there are plot elements here that you just look at and go, come on, the story writes itself. What happened? But
No one cared enough to write.
So that's probably true.
Probably they had to write Coneheads.
But I like the scene where Dana goes to see Egon. This first scene with him. I think it's funny. It establishes him very effectively, and it ties into what one of the main plot points is going to be.
I think for her, it's the road not taken. She goes right to Egon because, you're all tied up with this fucking Peter fella and he's all full of nonsense. And
he says, I'm gonna bring Rayon in this, and she says, that's fine, just don't tell Peter. We just can't get Peter involved.
don't tell Peter. Also, are you still talking to the black guy? What was his name?
Right? She just
did you guys think when they're in court, oh, this is random. Oh, I hope I'm not the only one that misheard this line.
Oh, no.
As a kid, I was like, I swore he said, in the movie, he says, when he's telling, he's like, oh, the blackout was a problem for everyone.
Oh.
I thought he said, sure, the black guy was a problem for everyone. And I was, as a kid, I was like, whoa.
Winston is going to be mad.
Because even as a kid, I was like, why don't they ever put him on the posters? Why isn't he? Why is Winston even in the movie?
The rumor, I'm sure you guys have probably heard, was that they originally wrote the role of Winston for Eddie Murphy, which...
Well, none of the Ghostbusters in the finished film are who it was written for.
It was
John Belushi, John Candy... It was just a different lineup of guys that before they,
And Eddie Murphy. Like, Eddie Murphy is Winston. And I feel like they just kind of didn't know what to do with, in either movie, they don't really know what to do with Ernie Hudson, which is sad.
He's missing for almost all of the important scenes. Yeah. The fact that he shows up in the courtroom at the beginning just to be like, it's like, oh, good luck, guys. And then he disappears. Mm-hmm. He's not even there to help them with, like, there's no shot of him maybe trying to contain the crowd outside. Winston's just gone. The movie does not give a fuck about him.
No, they really don't.
Have you guys seen that old SNL sketch with Julia Louis-Dreyfus? Oh, my God. And oh, Jesus, it's the best thing. So there's some kind of, like, these... It's funny little 80s girls, and they're talking about Ghostbusters, and they're like just interviewing each other, kind of. It's two girls, and she's like, which Ghostbuster was your favorite Ghostbuster? And her friend's like, I like the black one. And then she goes on, the black one, he didn't do nothing. No, he would have done something if they had given him good Ghostbuster job and said, hey, here is a good job, go do it and be successful with it. And she's like making the case for Winston.
It's totally legit. Yeah, it's a good case.
He's a great Ghostbuster.
He's introduced so late in the first movie. I always forget how late he comes into the first movie.
Why?
And right at that point, why? Yeah, exactly. And then in this movie too, it blew my mind how little he has to do. And you know, the only place they ever do Winston justice is the damn cartoon. And here's what's fucked up about that. Ernie Hudson was the only cast member to audition for the role in his role from the movie for the cartoon. They gave it to Arsenio Hall.
Wow.
Winston wasn't good enough to play Winston.
Ernie Hudson, an internet hug to you, sir.
I know, yeah, hey.
And like every time, all the Ghostbusters 3 rumors that were like, been swirling around for years and everything. And anytime they reach out to one of the cast members, hey, what's going on with that? And every time Ernie Hudson's like, I haven't heard anything. I'm like, no shit. I'm not surprised.
They're not going to call you.
That's
such a shame. I always think of four, I don't think of three Ghostbusters.
No, it always, it's so jarring to me on the cover of my DVD. It's the three of them. I'm like, I believe there's one more.
So many forget to call our names.
And even at the end of the first one, when they take out the marshmallow line, they're like, we did it. We did it. And he's like, we did it because we had the tools and the talent. It's like, oh, He wants to be a team player so bad, they just don't even know that you're there.
And I was here, too.
he gets hired in the first movie, right? We see him get hired because they're...
And he's not a scientist.
So much help. No.
Which is the best part about Winston.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
He's supposed to be...
The chain-smoking real New Yorker.
He's supposed to be us. He's supposed to be like, you guys are crazy. You know that, right?
Yeah. But you can't be
our... He's a part of the team. Yeah. He helps.
You can't be our entry point into the story if you come in three quarters of the way through the story. We've already picked a surrogate at this point.
There would have been they should have given him a really great like B plot
totally
in this movie, and they just forgot about him entirely. Just poor Winston.
I mean, I did think that there was one point when I was thinking about this and why, you know, where the fuck is Winston? And I was like, well, I mean, I guess it's kind of nice he avoids all this legal trouble.
True.
I mean, you don't have to go to court with these assholes who keep getting arrested.
They weren't my patents. You can't sue me for the proton pack.
I mean, that's not...
Part
of the team.
I guess you could argue he's not part of the initial investigation before they're doing any like serious ghost busting stuff, when they're just trying to figure out what was going on with Dana, because he's not a scientist. Anyway,
I have seen things that would turn your ass white.
That's one of the best lines in the first movie.
Yeah, it's so good.
So then the next thing we see is Peter's talk show, World of the Psychic. Yeah. What occurred to me this time, I feel so stupid for the very first time. The guy on the show who predicts the end of the world is right.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve, he says the world's gonna end.
Yeah.
He's right.
If
Vigo had gotten his way, would have been the end of the world. That dude was not full of shit.
I put that together.
Me too right now, you guys.
We're all psychic.
I did love that psychic show, though. I thought it was funny. And
it looks like a public access.
It does, which I think is hilarious.
The other woman, the other psychic said, when would the world end? You guys remember? It hasn't happened yet.
February
14th, 2016.
Yep.
Yeah, Valentine's Day. Bummer.
Bummer.
And then so after the show, we see that Peter's snubbed by the mayor, which is our first indication that there's tension and weirdness there. The mayor's assistant sort of pushes him away. This guy's going to be our Walter Peck stand-in for the sequel. Mm-hmm. And then we see the painting of angry Michael McKean.
Vigo
and Janos. I go back and forth on this character. I do think Peter McNichol, Janos.
Okay.
I think Peter McNichol, there's nothing to talk about with Vigo. It's not a character.
What do you, what qualms do you have with a painting, sir?
It's
a great painting.
That's actually maybe one of the better parts of the movie. I'm not being shitty. I really do think it's a great...
It's a great one.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
I love the idea of a villain that's like sort of influenced by like Vlad the Impaler or, you know, whatever they were going for there. I think that's cool. Janos, I think Peter McNichol is... This is a funny comedic performance. And I read that this was a more generic character, and he was the one that said, like, well, he should come from
another country,
where Vigo's from. And he was the one that really had a lot of ideas about his personality and how it'd make him a more fully formed character. He's a little too cartoonish for me, but I think Peter McNichol is great. I love in this first scene with him where he's standing over the woman's shoulder and he's like, everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know this. he's got a lot of really good lines. And he's got a crush on Dana, which we see she's working. She was what? A cellist in the
first
movie?
This is ridiculous.
And now she's restoring
fucking
paintings?
Specialty jobs can one girl have?
And she talks about this like this is such a bullshit. Like, oh, I'm just doing this because I had my baby. Soon as like I'm ready to go back to the orchestra.
And she had a baby. She explains this baby. And like so much has happened in these last 5 years. And it can't just be that she got knocked up. It was like, oh, we broke up and then I got together with this guy, but that didn't work out, so I got together with another guy, I married him, I had the baby, we're divorced now. Welcome.
See, what's funny is like if you imagine like, well, we don't want to see Peter as a father. Like that's not what we're interested in. That's not first of all, I think there's plenty of comedy there to see how he has changed and or hasn't changed. But if that was the attitude, you're kind of acknowledging the baby's a bad idea for your movie. We don't want to see Peter as a father. But anyway, so the thing with Janosch is that he really is just like a louder, cartoonier version of Louis from the first movie, because he's the servant to the main bad guy, and he's got a crush on Dana.
That's true. Yeah.
So then the next thing we see is Ray's occult bookstore. This is also something I really love. I like this scene, and I love this location. I kind of wish I like this as sort of like a home base, like the library in Buffy. Like I would not have minded seeing more of this place. I like this as sort of a base of operations away from the firehouse.
Donna, do you remember making lattes for Dan Aykroyd?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Was it when he was selling his liquor out of the parking lot of Jewel?
The Crystal Skull.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and two of his interns or whatever came and bought three lattes, and there were only two interns.
Yeah.
So they were either making it for a ghost or Dan Aykroyd.
That's right.
And
we
they
were
drove
like, maybe it's a ghost.
And we didn't know what they were, you know, we never thought anything about it, but then they drove away.
In the Ecto-1.
In the Ecto-1. Yes! We're like, oh my God, we just made Dan Aykroyd.
People think we're joking, but that's straight up.
That actually happened. Yeah. He drives around in the Ecto-1. Life's been rough on Dan Aykroyd since Ghostbusters 2.
I thought it was really in poor taste. I like Dan Aykroyd a lot too, but I thought it was a little in poor taste where right after Harold Ramis died, like one of his first tweets was, "We're still doing Ghostbusters 3. Don't worry."
Yeah. Oh, that is in poor taste.
Yeah. He's been the biggest champion of it.
I wonder why. Yeah. Yeah, I would think Ernie Hudson would be all over that. Like, guys, I wrote a script. It's great. It's called Ghostbusters 3, Winston's Day Out. Winston and Son.
Okay, so Peter shows up. Ray winds up admitting to him that they're helping Dana out with something. Show up at Dana's place. They realize that the spot where the carriage abruptly stopped, there's like the readings are off the charts there. So they dress up as a road crew to dig up the pavement, see what's going on underneath the road there. Right after that, we see Janosch immediately serves Vigo. Immediately. Like the abrupt intro to this villain. There's no mystery to him. There's no build up. It's just, to me, it felt like too much too quick. Like when you think about how slowly the identity of Gozer and what all is going on, like in Dana's refrigerator and like, and then the dogs and like, it builds to something here. It's like, I'm a painting. I'm this dude. You're working for me. Get me a child so that I might live again. It's like even the people writing this were like, this is his deal here. Let's just put it in this scene.
I was shocked at how fast the movie was. I was like, oh, we're almost done. I can't even, they're already going out to dinner. The baby's going to be stolen soon. Like I was like shocked at how quickly this movie went. It reminded me a lot of Men in Black 2, which was like, I saw it in theaters and was like, I can't believe I'm already leaving. I haven't finished my popcorn yet.
Because it feels, it's not only just the pace of the movie, but the fact that the story is so condensed, like the time, especially Men in Black 2, it takes place like in a night.
A single night, and it's like 68 minutes long. It's a very short movie. Yeah. It's not 68, but it's like very short movie.
I don't mind the breezy pace. I think in Ghostbusters 2, and I think there's more than enough time to like, because there are some redundant Vigo scenes of him talking to Janosch. Like we don't need his whole deal straight away. But anyway, so
some of your deal for later. You know,
I do like that. Janosch originally like is opposed to getting a baby. He's like, does it have to be a, and then like, zaps me.
He's us. He's the audience.
Yeah.
A baby.
Babies are not normally a good idea for narratives in comedy movies.
But so the Ghostbusters minus Winston, because fuck Winston, discover the river of slime running through.
I propose whenever they don't have Winston, we refer to them as the Ghostbusters. Whenever Winston is present, we refer to them as the real Ghostbusters.
I like it.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
Right. Okay, so the Ghostbusters, they find the old pneumatic transit system. Ray is dangling down there, gets a sample of it, knocks the power out on the way back up. to the entire city, which is impossible.
It was fine, quick. Fine, yeah, fine. It was really quick that happened.
I mean, this is pre-9/11. I feel like maybe the power grid was...
But post Stay Puffed Marshmallow.
That's true. Post, yeah.
Except in this reality.
We're in an alternate reality.
Just thinking about that.
Three moons.
Thinking about it.
Three moons three in New York. There were. There were the That's three true. Moons.
Yeah, in the late 80s. That's fine.
You know what? I don't have a problem with it anymore.
It's fine. Just try not to worry about it.
You know what's funny? Actually, the whole idea of this movie being like New York has to come together is so reminiscent of like the scenes they added to Spider-Man after September 11th. And
oh, that you mess with one of us.
It's kind of like, it's almost like they were making a movie in response to something that hadn't happened in New York yet. Where like, New Yorkers really need to come together. Why? Like, there was nothing that had happened yet in 1989.
I think maybe just pride. The reputation that the city has of being, like, angry.
Hey, that guys, was, be nicer. That's a good motto.
Was that, like, I'll the heyday of, like, Rudy Giuliani cleaning up New York?
It, you know what?
Did I bet he write it this script?
Yeah. This is part of the tourism Rudy Giuliani
Yeah, I bet this... Come well, no, York, I really seriously bet this coincides with the Times Square cleanup and all that. Yeah,
that might be what it was all about. The ooze is Rudy Giuliani. he's Beagle.
So Janos checks on Dana during the blackout. Again, the flashlight eye is one of my favorite images from the movie.
I just love the way he plays his character. I know it's so cartoonish. Good. I know it is, but it's a PG. It's a rated PG movie.
This is definitely. There was definitely a mandate of like that cartoon is really successful.
Yeah,
like there's it really veers more into that territory than the first. Anything but like the tone of the first movie.
I just love the choices he makes as a character actor. Like, and just, yeah, it's like the, oh, is the baby here? And he's a woo. And then, it's like, it's 10 p.m. The baby's clearly asleep. You know? I love it.
Okay, so then after that, we get the scene of the Ghostbusters on trial. And now, before we get into this scene, I would like to take a really quick detour down to Chris's fashion corner. So the reason I want to do a fashion corner for this scene is they're in their suits for the trial. All the Ghostbusters are in suits. Now, when I was a little kid in the summer, this was coming out. There was like a clip of it on TV. Maybe it was a Siskel and Ebert thing. I don't know. But they showed a clip from the movie, and it was from this sequence where they've got their proton packs on and they're busting ghosts and they're in their suits. And I thought, oh shit! Their new uniforms are suits, and so I was.
They work on Wall Street by day. They bust ghosts at night.
How formal! And so I was drawing a picture of guys in suits with proton packs, like shooting ghosts. And my dad walked by, and he was like, "What is this?" And I was like, "These are the Ghostbusters. This is what their new uniforms look like." And my dad was like, "Where did you get that?" And I was like, "I saw it on TV. These are the new uniforms." And he was like, "Chris, I promise you, those aren't the new Ghostbusters outfits." And I remember feeling like, "You are going to feel so stupid, sir, when we go and see this in the theater." I thought like, "Wow, what a bold choice. Okay, interesting." Awesome. Obviously, they do not wear suits outside of this one scene, classing it up. But speaking of, I love the new dark gray jumpsuits they wear. Mm. I love them so much more than the beige ones from the first movie. Mm. And I like that, like, in this one, you get the, like, there's scenes where it's, like, mixed and matched. Like, some of them are in the beige ones, some of them are in the new dark gray ones. The fact that there's scenes where the Ghostbusters are in different colors is sort of a push in the direction of the cartoon, where they're in color-coded jumpsuits, which I didn't really like. Winston even gets the shaft there. They give him, like, the light green, like, spring
jumpsuit. And you see in the black one.
Yeah, like wearing Zach, from the Power Ranger. Or Trini, the Yellow Ranger.
Trini, the Yellow Ranger.
And what I don't understand is that, so I like that the logo of this movie is the ghost inside the red thing doing the two.
I love that.
Why is it on the uniforms?
I always, when I see the logo for the first one, I'm like, he's doing it wrong.
But it's meant to be like two, Ghostbusters 2.
But it looks better.
But it's, no, but it's like a weird meta thing in the movie of like, you don't know you're in a sequel. Stop it.
They sort of do.
Right, but maybe he's just putting up a peace sign.
And then in the third one, what is he? The fucking heavy metal devil horns?
Sure.
Well, he could actually fight the devil.
All right, so we're going to go with it. He's making a peace sign.
I think that's it. And it's obviously appropriated to be two in the logo for the film. But in the movie, I think it's just the ghost making a peace sign.
Why?
Because they're rebranding? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. There's no reason. It doesn't make sense.
It feels like a weird, like, $95 to spend on a new sign and new patches for your suits, but...
All right. but yeah, so
they had petty cash left over.
Speaking of makeovers, they also have a new... There's the Ecto-1A, I believe it's called in this movie. The car. And really, the idea of giving the car refit was just dumping a ton of shit on the roof of it. There's just like a tower of lights, which I remember thinking as a kid was like fucking awesome. And I had a toy of the Ecto-1, and the Ecto-1A was the same goddamn toy. It just had new stickers. And like, I remember thinking, I remember my grandma taking me into a KB toy store in the mall.
Oh, KB.
And I was telling, I got very irate with the manager. It was the manager actually, because I was like, I'm not buying a whole new car. I own the car. I just want the stickers. I bought the car. They got my money. I want the stickers. I'm not buying the same car twice. And he was like, well, unfortunately, they don't sell the stickers separately. I didn't get those stickers.
No, you won't. But I love your tiny consumer outrage.
It just doesn't make any... Yeah. They played us so hard.
Yeah.
The toy companies played us so hard back then.
But not this gentleman here.
I didn't do it. I didn't cave. And it wasn't even my money. It was my grandma's.
But she worked hard for that money at some point.
I think the Ecto-1A looks a little ridiculous as an adult. It's a weird... I just like the look of the classic.
Yeah.
The classic one. This one's just a little too busy. There's too much shit going on.
I always worry about the overpasses.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of crap they have stacked on that thing. How is it? It's like, why are we only going 20 miles an hour?
Well, the car weighs 6 tons.
And then the other thing I thought was cool for this one in terms of the fashion was like on all the posters, all the merchandising, like they really showed off those like slime cannons.
Yeah.
And that was cool too. Like they had the new jumpsuits and then like some of the guys had the proton packs. Some of them had these like new cannon things. I remember as a kid seeing that poster and being very excited, like, what is that? What does that do? So that's it. That's the very brief fashion corner. So let's keep moving here. Lewis Tully, Rick Moranis, is their lawyer in this courtroom scene. I'm going to be honest. I love Rick Moranis. I love the character of Lewis. This would have been fine to leave as a cameo in just this scene, only because the rest of his scenes are so superfluous to the rest of the movie. Him and they don't know. Not only do they not know what to do with Winston, they don't know what the hell they're doing. I think Janine is only in the movie because she's in the cartoon. That's why she looks different in this one too. Mm-hmm. They made her look like cartoon Janine. They really don't have anything to do in this one. I think just seeing Lewis here in a little cameo would have been fun.
I also hate Lewis at the end.
Really?
I hate that.
I do too.
Because I remember as a kid being like, oh, so when they make the third one, he's going to be a Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
I mean, they'll thwart him a little. They'll be like, yeah, it's over here. Yeah, go that way and then turn left.
Winston's going to be like, you're going to have to earn it. And then Ray's like, hey, Lewis, you want to go out for ice cream? And Winston's like, Winston.
Now there's four Ghostbusters on the cover. And Winston's like, God damn, I've been here since the beginning.
Oh no.
But yeah, I wrote in my notes, Winston gets the shaft again, and because he just disappears in this scene.
And I love him so much.
But yeah, and then this is the scene where we realize that the ooze reacts to human emotions, the aggression of the judge specifically. The ghosts of the Scolari brothers burst out. I mentioned that this is, fuck, they look awesome. This is
great.
A cool sequence. So cool. Mm-hmm. I like the laugh they have. Yeah. It's so creepy. It's so cool. But then I'm confused. They pop out of the slime.
Yes.
Oh, I thought there was like an old trap there.
No, they fly out of the container of ooze.
Whoa, that stuff is even more dangerous than
I thought. It doesn't make sense. What do they do? We need rule. What is going on? I need to know what's going on with the rules.
It's anarchy, Chris.
There are no rules to the slime.
This is the same universe as Mannequin.
Yeah. It really is. Like the slime
runs.
Period.
Under
that was
the
end of the sentence. The slime.
Because
can yeah. control yeah. come to life?
Because the slime. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but yeah, and then like so the judge says case is dismissed, suit up, do your thing, whatever. The Do Re Egon. I have a shirt that says Do Re Egon.
And the smirk he gives.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I said Egon.
Egon.
So they capture the Scolaris. We get the montage of the Ghostbusters are back. We see Janine for the first time. Slimer friendly all of a sudden. Okay, so the scene, I don't know if you guys noticed this in the montage. There is a quick scene of when Ray's driving the car and Peter turns around and looks at Egon like, what? He's driving pretty erratically. And it kind of, that's kind of it. Just a throwaway sort of like, what's gotten into him? There's a deleted scene where Ray is possessed, like by, I think it must have to do with the Vigo thing, because that goes nowhere. I think it was after he's staring at the painting later on, right?
Yeah,
and then they get in the car and Vigo's like possessed him and he's trying to kill the Ghostbusters by having Ray crash
the car.
That's
actually a cool sequence.
Yeah.
Well,
so that's where that little chunk, they disagree.
It's slowing down our really short movie.
Oh my God. Wait, so the next scene is where the Ghostbusters confirm that the slime responds to human emotions. They're showing Peter the test they've been running. Egon fucked the slime.
I mean, he may have just dropped some jizz in it.
What was that? Not what I thought you were going to say.
His smelly little
fair
spunk.
Fair point. Okay.
He's a scientist.
He is.
Yeah. The reaction that I'm considering it. The reaction they gave though really, to me, it was like, I envision thrusting.
Yeah. American Pie version. Yeah.
The most out of place deleted scene from Ghostbusters 2. Ray walking in on Egon.
Close the door!
All you would have to do is like put it in like some sort of like a Tupperware container.
Oh God.
You stick it on your junk. Oh, you'd have to be hard. You stick it on your junk, and then you just turn on a Jackie Wilson song. You just lay down, it does all the work.
That's true.
Because that's what we see next. Jackie Wilson in the toaster.
You put it on a. You put it inside a blow-up doll. That's what you do.
Mm, a my-size Barbie. Oh. Way too small for Egon.
Yeah. That's fair.
Because he's tall, not because he's... I'm sure he's a very girthy...
Oh, no.
He's a big guy. I don't know. I'm going to say of all the Ghostbusters, he's probably got the biggest dick.
Winston?
Oh, shit, Winston.
Come on. That's why they didn't hang out with Winston. They saw him in the shower.
You're intimidated. Yeah, yeah. You can't shower here anymore, Winston.
Oh, my God.
What are we talking about? I think Egon's got the biggest member of all of the Ghostbusters.
I'm going to put
this... Not of all the real Ghostbusters.
There's the distinction. Technicality. I'm going to put it to our listeners. Put on our Facebook page, which Ghostbuster has the biggest dong? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Pictures are better. Draw us a picture. As a pony.
Your pony, really? Make it a pony.
I posted that just so that guy didn't kill me. It's like, either this goes on our Facebook page or he's wearing my skin. So. I'm kidding. I loved it.
It was wonderful.
I sent you this picture because I can't figure out how to email you my hair.
It puts the picture on the Facebook page. Okay. Peter goes to visit Dana at work. This is where I was sort of looking for some backstory of why the dude's spirit is tied to the painting, or like some maybe stories of it being haunted, something. This is in my notes where I complained about how we're just sort of watching the same courting process they had in the first movie. Mm-hmm. I know you're gonna you were a big fan of the bathtub scene, I'm guessing. Was this your favorite bathtub scene?
It's my favorite bathtub scene in this movie. I forgot it existed until I saw it again. I was like, oh my god, yes!
It does get slightly sexy for a second.
It's scary.
That was, I thought, just really in poor taste. Like, I'm going to take off my shirt, too. Why? Why are you doing that?
She doesn't
that?
Want to get it wet.
Why?
My mom used to get fully nude when she bathed me. I just wanted to let that sit there. It's not true. I wanted to milk that moment for all it was worth.
Okay. So behind you is the screen that is showing our levels. And I just started watching the silence.
the flat line.
My mother used to get fully nude when she bathed me. You could hear like a dog crying three blocks away.
I was 16.
When my kid was like 2, I would have to take off my shirt to bathe her because she was a splasher. She just like would just slap down with all of her might and like just gallons of water. Just like, I'd have to mop every time I gave her a bath. Every single time. It's like, I'm just going to take the shirt off because I want to wear it after the bath.
Well, don't you think maybe that's what Dana's doing here?
Except she didn't take off her bra.
This is a PG movie.
If it's a kid's movie, don't take off her shirt.
I'm with, yeah. Okay.
Bathe the kid in a small tub. Like, yeah, but then you like need the bathtub. Also, she would have noticed the water stopped. Like, yeah, the sound of the rushing water just becomes goo, which also photographs really so well underwater.
Gross. Yeah.
Like, it turns into, like
almost like intestines.
It looks
looking.
Like intestines, yeah.
It's gross and scary!
So it turns into a giant thing that tries to eat them.
A giant tongue is what it looks like.
Yeah, totally.
It's gross. Yeah.
So she runs to Peter's. She has time to put on a coat, but not a shirt. He calls Ray and Egon to go check it out. And then so the Ghostbusters go to see this painting of Vigo. Already they're establishing some sort of connection between Vigo and the ooze, but they never say what it is exactly.
The ooze stops at the museum. That's
right.
All
traveling
right,
there.
But why? How is it connected to Vigo? What does he have to do with this ooze? Again, this is another thing that I feel like they just
because
sort of...
Dana says, I feel like the picture is looking at me, and like I feel like it's watching me. So then Peter just has it checked out, and when they're developing photos.
Yeah, no, I get all that. But then they see the river of slime in the pictures. They're developing a Vigo, but that's after they've been at the museum because they're taking pictures of it.
But they're taking pictures of it because Dana says, I feel like it's watching.
No, I understand all that. What I'm saying is the movie never gives us a clear reason of how this river of ooze is connected to Vigo.
That was actually a question I was going to bring you guys. Did you think that the ooze was already there, or did you think that the picture being there, like he had the power?
That's what I wanted to know, was if whether it tied into his whole plan and for what purpose.
Yeah.
Because making the citizens of New York angry really doesn't seem to affect. I mean, if anything, you'd want to pacify all these people if you're going to try and take them over.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't really understand how they. It seems like two separate plot threads that connect just because. Like,
right. Like, there was always this ooze, and then this picture just needed that ooze, and luckily it was there. Or, because the river of ooze is in the painting when you develop the photo, apparently.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, so he summoned. He is the river of ooze as well as being this picture, and blah blah blah, but there is no explanation.
That's just
sort of what I thought. And they do talk for a while about some stuff that I checked out of for sure. They're like, there's a point where they're like saying, I don't know, a paragraph or so about Vigo, and
they talk about who he was when he was alive.
He was a magician that lived for 105 years, but didn't die of old age. They killed him in every possible way you could kill him. And when his head died, before his head died, so his head died after his body.
Mm. He said,
death is a window, or death is just a door and I'll come through the window, or something like that. Which made the words death, door, and window were in the last line, and I was definitely like changing my 3-week-old baby at the time, but I'm pretty sure that he, like, it was something along the lines of, death is but a door, and I will come through the window.
I mean, it's him just saying, I'll be back. But it really, yeah. I'm 99% sure they never connect Vigo and the ooze in any real way other than just saying, it's some sort of, they're working together. But there's no reason. They don't establish exactly what's going on there.
Right.
So...
I mean, not, you know, they could easily just say New York is a hellmouth, and we'd be like, oh, okay.
Sure. Okay, so now this is my favorite scene. It's the Ghostbusters sans Peter. It's Ray, Egon, and Winston. Mm-hmm. When they go down into the sewer for the second time.
That's awesome.
And I love that Winston's in on the action here. I love the whole, like the severed heads on the spikes that suddenly appear. The thing calling Winston. This is the only scene in the movie that reminds me of the first Ghostbusters.
The heads on the spikes... I was like, okay, so that is Vigo then, because there wouldn't be New Yorkers' heads on spikes.
Right, it's image. Yeah, totally.
That's Carpathian imagery, right. If ever there was. I mean,
but then the ghost train isn't really connected to anything else, but it's still a cool moment. And then what I remembered when I was watching this scene was that when I was a little kid, I thought Winston was played by a different actor in this movie, because in the first movie he's got shorter hair, he's got the face like a goatee or something.
He almost looks younger in this movie than he does.
He does. Yeah. His hair's a little longer and lighter, and yeah. he's clean shaven. I thought it was a totally different guy playing Winston in this one.
I, as a kid, I liked the line. Did you get the number on that train? Sorry,
I missed it. Yeah, that's great good. Delivery. That's and then so they manage to they find the river again. Ray gets pulled in. They jump in after him, and then this is when we start to see how the ooze affects them. That Winston and Ray start getting angry at each other, and Egon's like, you know, take your clothes off. So everybody's
he's like, I was gonna kill you.
Luckily, they're all in their long underwear.
Thank goodness.
And the ooze that's all over their faces and arms doesn't matter. But
it's like
I like when they interrupt Peter and Dana's date.
Yes.
And they run in all still in their underwear covered in goo. And they're saying there's rivers of this stuff under the city. It's all leading to the museum. This might have been a better time to reveal the connection. Because this way it's like, yeah, no shit. Like, we knew that. We know that really, it's running to the museum. So the Ghostbusters talk to the mayor in another scene ripped directly from the first movie. Mm-hmm. The mayor's assistant locks them up so that they can't talk to the papers. He has them committed to a mental institution. Mm-hmm. Them getting locked up right before the climax is also straight out of the first movie. Oscar is kidnapped by the cross-dressing nanny ghost Janosch. How is he a ghost? Why is he cross-dressing?
He had the power to have flashlight eyes. He can be.
But is it actually him, or is this like some sort of?
It's actually
him. So he can just straight up turn and do. This is one of his new
Vigo
powers.
Made him that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I admit, it's a weird thing to get hung up on. The main reason this scene kind of disappoints me is that in my memory of this, when as a little kid, I had remembered this scene as being like a creepy old lady ghost nanny that comes and snatches the baby. And I thought that was fucking scary. When I realized as an adult or a teenager that it was Janosch, I was kind of like, now it's kind of funny.
It always creeped me out that it was Janosch.
I think it's funny.
Did not realize it was Janosch.
Oh. It's Janosch as an old lady.
Dressed as a woman.
I thought it was an old
Which
lady.
This is not me making a criticism. I'm genuinely asking because I don't remember. Do they somehow compel Oscar to crawl out onto the ledge? Or is that
she walks into the bedroom and the window's open and he's on the ledge.
Mm-hmm. We don't know how he got out
but
there.
But he's standing.
Right.
I don't even think he can stand yet.
Yeah.
That baby can't.
So they've compelled him to come out to the ledge for him to grab him.
Why even have someone come and scoop him up? If you can move him, just like...
Move him.
Yeah. Just a baby flying through the city.
If you're a ghost, why go to the trouble? Just pop through the wall and...
This is a scene. This next sequence.
Steal a baby that's closer.
It's when the slime starts overflowing onto the streets, and this is now there's like pandemonium. The fur coat comes to life and runs away from the owner, which I think was an idea from the first movie that they just didn't use. The Titanic. That's the part I always remember being in the first movie. The Titanic finally comes into to shore. I love the imagery of the Titanic and the people walking out. But the thing is the reason I remember it being in the first movie is there is the sequence in the first movie of...
Where hell takes...
Right.
Yeah.
And again, like, what's going on here? Why the influx of ghosts? What does that have to do with the slime? Like, there's just no... I need more connection between these plot
there
elements.
Is a connection there, but they don't explain it.
Vigo, the slime, the ghosts. I need to know how all this is working together, because it just seems so, like, well, this needs to happen now in the story, so that's why it's happening.
Well, because other than the Scolari brothers and the montage of ghosts, they're not fighting a ghost. They're fighting an evil mage, basically, who's been able to keep himself alive in a painting.
They don't even do that until the last 10 minutes. Like, right. I was going to save this for my final thoughts, but to me, that was the most alarming thing about the movie this time watching it, was that there is very little ghost busting in Ghostbusters 2.
Like, but you could also make the argument that in Ghostbusters 1, they're not fighting a ghost. They're fighting a deity.
Right.
What was the religion? Yeah, I can't remember.
Soul or something?
Yeah. But there, I mean, there was like a Zoroastrianism or something. It was, I forgot what the deity was, but Sumerian.
But there's, I mean, just in terms of like them in their uniforms with the proton packs doing this shit, you never even see them load the trap. You never even see the containment unit in this movie.
Well, well, you see the trap.
The trap, but you ne- there's
yeah,
no.
Yeah, you don't see the.
You see the trap like once in the courtroom. Like, there's just not a lot of ghost busting in this one. But anyway, so.
Well, no, because there's that montage after the courtroom where they're
busting. Oh, with the jogger, they get him in the trap. Yeah, that's right. That's actually a cool scene.
Yeah, that is cool.
I like that the ghost checks his pulse. It's nice. The mayor says, like, so shit goes terrible. The ghosts popping up all over the city. Mayor says they need the Ghostbusters. There's strange stuff, you know, in the sky. If this also feels familiar, it's because once again, we saw this exact same thing in the first movie. So the Ghostbusters are they release them from the institution. They can't get into the museum because it's been covered with the wall of surrounded by the slime.
Like hardened slime.
Yeah.
Or else they just walk through it.
And they figure out that like they need an immense amount of positive energy to break this shell. Again, and this just really is where it starts to bother me the most, that we never saw anything about how the slime is affecting people, because then the whole turnaround at the end doesn't feel as meaningful. So this is probably one of the most memorable scenes in the movie, and that's where they use the Statue of Liberty as the symbol of goodwill. This is the sequel's version of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. This is stupid as fuck. I have never liked this. I've never liked this moment. The Marshmallow Man is ridiculous, but it's intentionally ridiculous and it's motivated. This is like, it can't move. It's a statue. Like, and I mean,
it a ghost and it's not.
The fabric moves like fabric.
Yeah.
And they're piloting it with a Nintendo controller.
Which, was a bad gag. Like, that's a really bad gag.
They didn't drive the toaster around like it was a remote control car. Like, it just doesn't, I don't think this works this way. But fine, whatever. So, they use the Statue of Liberty to crash through the ceiling in the museum. The Ghostbusters rappel down. Vigo appears. He's too powerful. The singing citizens outside weaken him with all their good vibes. Vigo retreats into the painting. They zap him. The day is saved. That's pretty much as long as the climax takes. It always bothered me how this last fight always felt so small and abbreviated. It feels like they were also running out of steam at this point. Like, they were just like, we could go through something as big and elaborate as we did in the last one, or we could just fucking zap him and he's gone.
Yeah.
And they went with that route.
Should have killed somebody. Maybe Winston dies. And then Winston gets his moment where they all remember how great Winston was.
We should have invited him to that party. Totally didn't.
Or they come out, just the three of them, and everyone's like, the Ghostbusters are alive!
No one even notices. Hey, look, and here's Lewis. We've already got him.
He's the new
Now we have a fourth.
Everyone.
Winston's ghost appears. God damn it.
Now we're the real Ghostbusters, everyone.
I think Winston is the people's favorite.
He is.
Because he's of the people.
He's a people's champ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, and then the last.
Look for him first.
I love that we spent so much of this podcast talking about Winston.
You have to.
It's the most anyone's ever talked about Winston.
He's the best. He's just as best.
So I should mention Winston. Really quick that the painting, we see the painting of Vigo has instead become a portrait of the Ghostbusters with Oscar. What?
Yeah.
That's weird.
It was rough.
Well, overall, Ghostbusters 2 is the best Ghostbusters. And there's just nothing.
I was trying to figure out why. Why does Donna like this one more? And what I was coming up with was I had guessed it was possible that you saw this one first. And then mm-hmm. but also I thought mainly it was gonna be because this one isn't as scary as the first one, that's why you liked it, because you didn't like scary movies as a kid.
I didn't like scary movies, and I guess that's possible, but I definitely didn't see the first one for quite some time after I'd seen the second one. But I think the second one is so charming. I love their dealing in the beginning with their problems that comes from what's the reality of being a Ghostbuster, you know? That's something that not a lot of superhero type people examine. So
mass amnesia is apparently the biggest.
That's the biggest problem.
Well, I see what you're saying. Like, remove it from the giant plot hole and just mm-hmm. what the actual Ghostbusters are up to. Yeah. I like that stuff too.
I love that. Yeah. I guess, and part of what I like more is problems with the first movie is why I like the second.
That's what I'm looking for.
I don't like the Zool, Beastmaster, Gatekeeper thing. I never liked it. I think it's weird. I don't really buy it. And it goes on for a really long time. And there are these dogs, and I don't really like them. And I don't know. Hmm. That stuff just never engaged me, ever.
Okay.
But I was always right on board with this scary fucking ooze that jumps out at you and tries to grab your leg.
The ooze
makes
is scary.
You think mean.
The ooze is scarier than the dogs from the first movie?
Yeah.
I've always found it problematic to call them dogs.
Whatever. I know there's an actual name for them and people are going crazy.
They just don't seem like dogs to me.
But I'm just, it's shorthand for,
I know what
I'm talking about.
But even in the movie, they're like, my girlfriend's a dog now, or whatever, turned into a dog.
Oh, Lewis said, that's another great line from this movie, too, when Lewis is in front of the judge, and he's like, well, I think these guys are okay. One time I turned into a dog, and they saved me. And that's it.
Yeah.
But the red eyes on those things, and when they break out of the statues, that really scared me as a kid. Mm. I was afraid of Ghostbusters. I was afraid of that movie. Mm. I was really little when I saw it.
Yeah, that came
out. I was like 4 or 5 years old when mm-hmm. I saw that movie.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I was probably 10 or 12. But, I mean, so I guess a lot has to do with what, you know, that I saw it first, and it was a big part of me learning who the Ghostbusters were, and I think it was probably, I probably saw this first and then got really into the cartoon. I think I'd seen
that
the
was
cartoon
my next
a
question.
Little bit, but I saw this and was like, oh, man, I love that. Oh, when there's a cartoon all ready to go?
The cartoon is more in line with this movie.
Yes.
Like there's
it's great. I love Janine.
It's sort
I
of
love
like
Lewis.
It's kind of like I feel the same way as with the Ninja Turtles sequel, which also is more like the cartoon. It's more in line with the cartoon, and it was a response to how dark that first movie was.
Mm-hmm.
And there's and so I don't think I still like Ninja Turtles 2. I think it's the funniest Turtles movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take the first one any day of the week over it. And it's kind of, they're very similar in that way. The first ones are darker, a little bit edgier, and then kind of a mix of tones going on. And then the second ones are a lot softer around the edges. Carlos, final thoughts on Ghostbusters 2.
I like Ghostbusters 2. I recognize that it's not a superior film to Ghostbusters 1.
Poor Donna.
But I think I can watch this one. It's a shorter movie.
Yes.
And it is, like, because I saw it, the entry point was, I saw it as a kid.
Yeah.
And I didn't see Ghostbusters till probably my adolescence. Also, I am not as charmed by 1980s Bill Murray as the rest of the world is. So for everyone to be like, Ghostbusters 1 is amazing because Bill Murray is blah, blah, blah. I was like, he's good. He's a good actor, but he's never the reason I saw any movie from that time period. Like, mm-hmm. I like old man Bill Murray plenty. I think he's great.
I love
but him. Like 1980s on top of his game, you know, smarmy playboy Bill Murray, like, you can have him. It just never really did it for me.
I think it, I mean, even whether you're on board with that stuff or not, and I was, I mean, I think I probably only knew who Bill Murray was because of Ghostbusters when I was a kid, but I think the different personalities of all of them, like the four of them, if they, I mean, especially if they had gotten done a better job of getting Winston involved with a lot of this stuff, like the four personalities are so, they just play off one another so well that mm-hmm. even if you're not, you know, even if Bill Murray wasn't your favorite or not your favorite Ghostbuster or whatever, like it just, they still work so well, like as a unit, like I whether it's in the second one or the first one. Like I mentioned earlier, like the fact that there's not a lot of actual ghostbusting in this, goes hand in hand with the fact that like, we don't see them using the equipment very much. We don't see much of the car or the firehouse. Like it's kind of surprising. There's not a lot of the Ghostbusters iconography in this movie. So, that's not a huge thing for me, but I can see how that maybe adds to some people's like disappointment in the film is that there's just, the stuff you came to see, there's not a ton of it. I think to me, this movie feels smaller and less authentically New York. Like it's kind of sitcom-y and soundstagey, whereas the first one had more of a blue collar feel to it, which I really like. Again, this is just a preference thing. It's definitely lighter, it's sillier, that's intentional. So you're either on board with that decision or you're not. So for me personally, they just softened it all up a little bit too much, but still entertaining, still has several laugh out loud moments. And like I said at the beginning, there's some neat ideas in here. They don't seem interested enough in any of them to like really develop them. And that's a shame because there is like a really cool story here. So yeah, just not bad, just disappointing. That's all. Still a totally watchable film. I mean, I know we did spend most of this time sort of like, you know, pointing out the sillier aspects, but, we've watched some bad movies. Ghostbusters 2 is not a bad movie.
No.
I mean, the fact that it's just, like, even the worst, you know, the worst I can say about it, and I know you don't agree, Donna, but if the worst I can say about it is it's just kind of a subpar, less effective version of Ghostbusters 1, that's okay. I'll take that. That's okay.
Yeah. There are a lot of movies that are that. Have you ever seen, like, Evolution?
Oh, God. It's like, this is what happens when it doesn't click, when it doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah, I'd watch Ghostbusters 2 over that any day.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we play Two Truths, One Lie really quick? So
I don't know, Donna knows everything about this movie.
Okay, here we go. Two truths, one lie for Ghostbusters 2. I'm gonna give you two truths and one lie. Number one. As was the case with the first Ghostbusters, a substantial amount of additional footage was shot but not used in the finished film. One of the most significant cuts involved a subplot where Eugene Levy played the cousin of Louis Tully. Number two. There have been numerous scripts generated for a potential Ghostbusters 3. One of the most notorious was written by Dan Aykroyd and involved the idea that there was a nightmarish alternate dimension that ran parallel to ours and existed in the moments when we blink our eyes. When the two realities begin to merge, only the Ghostbusters can save the day. Number three. Viggo returned the following year in an episode of The Real Ghostbusters cartoon where he possessed Lewis and only Slimer recognized that something was amiss. Which one was the lie?
I don't remember that episode of the cartoon. I'm going to say that's the lie.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards as well.
Okay. You are both correct.
Yeah!
Number three is the lie. So Eugene Levy did shoot scenes for Ghostbusters 2. You can find photos of it online.
I buy that. I bought that because of the SCTV connection and the Toronto Second City connection. And
so, yeah, that Lewis apparently had him struggling to be a Ghostbuster was a much bigger subplot. And I guess Eugene Levy was somehow tied in with all that. Didn't make it in the movie. And then number two.
He got Winston'd out of that movie.
Yeah, he did. And then that was one of the Ghostbusters in Hell, sort of, I think was the title of the script. That was what the idea was. That this Hell dimension existed when we close our eyes. And that it starts to bleed over.
That's like the shadow people from Are You Afraid of the Dark?
They did, the ooze did get, the mood slime was referenced in the cartoon. That did come back.
I thought it was.
Yeah. All right, guys, that's it for us. If you're a fan of the show, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher if you haven't already. Like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and to share your own memories of these films. Let us know if you have suggestions for other titles we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.